WildTalkRadio.com.
Show is going to get a staple gun to the face. I think. I don't know. It's early. Who knows? Brent might want to do it for fun. I don't know. Anyway, this is Superhero Not So Live, live right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. WildTalkRadio.com. CBRadioLive.com. Twitch.tv/WGRLive. Chat if you have an Amazon Prime link to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming. Support the channel by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen. You can also use credit card Rockstock in the Fortnite item shop. Because hashtag epic partner. I am the producer. We have the intern.
You promised no staple guns, right?
I mean, unless you have a staple gun at your office and you want to just use it and sort of see how it feels.
No, I don't have a staple gun and, No, that does not sound much like a, you know, joyous way to ring in the holidays. I'm just saying.
I mean, fair. We also have the Keishi.
Yeah, no staple guns for me either. or many other things that happened in that match.
Keishi, do you have a cinder block we can use? I'm not going to tell you why, but... do you have one?
No.
How about a barbed wire wrapped chair that will end up, you know, sticking to someone's head by accident?
I have a barbed wire chair. I don't know if it'll stick to anybody's head because it's only like 2 inches tall.
Okay.
I was going to question why you had a barbed wire chair, but since it's only 2 inches, we're good.
Yeah.
Right. Look, it's not about the size; it's how you use it.
In fact, how you use it. Anyway, we're here to talk about Full Gear, which was 4+ hours on what, Saturday night? Yeah, it was Saturday night.
Yeah. The days kind of blend together when it comes to some of these pay-per-views, so.
They're usually on a Sunday. Now they're already to Saturday. Just throw everything off. Why not? Yeah.
And it's funny because WWE's pay-per-view is also going to be on a Saturday, which... screws with my head because it's always been Sundays typically.
Yeah, but at least they've been more consistent. Well, AEW was on Saturdays originally, and then they moved to Sundays, and WWE moved to Saturdays, and then...
Well, that's because AEW, when they used to do pay-per-views, were on holiday weekends, so that way they could do it on Sunday, and you still had the next day off.
Yeah, and they still do holiday weekends, it's just now they've added more of them. Anywho...
Hey, Rock, don't forget there's one coming up next month.
Yep, that's a thing.
I loved the reaction on Sunday. Just, oh, God.
Right. World's End. Yep, that's a thing. Right. Yeah. Uh-huh. Hi. So, look forward to watching that. Anywho, we're here to talk about Full Gear. It took place Saturday. Brent, as always, what happened on the pre-show?
Oh, I get to talk about the pre-show. Yay. So, first up, we had a 30-minute pre-show to the pre-show, which I didn't know happened, but apparently does.
Yeah, I got a little caught off on that, too. I was like, I went to check it to make sure it was on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, oh, it started already, and it's half an hour before it's supposed to. Okay, we started.
They promoted saying 6:30 at one point, and then on TV they also said it kicks off at 7, which sent mixed signals.
What was weird was, so I went to YouTube, and earlier in the day it was like, oh, it starts, you know, 6:30 Eastern, 4:30 my time. And I was like, okay, So I had it open, and then it starts, and I was like, okay, so they've got RJ City and Renee and Stokely all there, you know, doing their usual pre-show shtick, and they're talking and they're talking. And then 7 o'clock hits, and it went dark for a second, and then they did, like, the whole zero-hour intro, and that's when I was like, wait, did we just get a pre-show to the pre-show? What is this shit? And the pre-show was just basically the matches, and it was like, oh, okay, yeah, I guess they got all the shtick done early, and then it was, well, we're going to offer the matches just to focus on. And I was like, oh, okay. So I'm used to the pre-show being, we're going to do a, you know, we have like a match, maybe two, and then you've got your banter and your little stuff that goes on with the crowd and the host and everything. And no, they just split it up, and it was confusing as all hell.
It's what they did. It's what they did for All In, which they never told anyone, but here we are.
Right, the All In one, it's I did what Casey did, where it's like, I tuned in, and you were like, oh, yeah, they had, you know, like the contract signing for Miro and
Hobbs.
Powerhouse Hobbs. And I was like, wait, what? Like, no, they didn't.
Yes,
and you're like, oh, yeah, and Big Show, like, chokeslammed Jeff Jarrett. I was like, when the hell did this happen? And I didn't realize, yeah, they had, like, a 30-minute show before the advertised pre-show.
Yeah.
Where they did two fucking angles.
So what are these matches that took place?
So the pre-show matches, we start with Eddie Kingston defending two belts, because that's his whole thing now, is that he, no matter who he fights, he puts up both the New Japan Pro Wrestling Strong, which is not one of the belts of AEW, but we will talk about that later, and then the Ring of Honor World Championship up against Jay Lethal, the longest reigning Ring of Honor World Champion there is. It was a match. It was a typical Team TNA match where all of the things happen. Everyone gets involved, and their mother, mm-hmm. and their wife, or ex-wife, as the case may be. But ultimately, in the end, Jay Lethal was going to try to use the guitar off of distraction on Eddie Kingston after Kingston and him had, like, crawled and fought to try and get the guitar. And Ortiz comes out and helps Eddie Kingston, surprisingly. I mean, they're buds. They go back. Mm-hmm. But Ortiz has kind of been away from Eddie for a while, kind of handling his own business with his former tag team partner. And the entire time that Ortiz comes out, he's holding, you know, the sock with, you know, whatever is in it. The what?
The mad ball.
Yeah, the mad ball. And he's sitting there with Eddie, and Eddie's doing that thing where he's almost turning his back to Ortiz, and I'm just like, oh, are they going to do this right now? Are they going to do this? But no, Ortiz helped his bro out. Eddie defended the titles. Jay can't buy a win. And yeah, so we had that, and Eddie then does his usual thing where he grabs the microphone and tells people to buy the pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. Completely off cuff, while also telling Stokely Hathaway basically to fuck off. But that was a fun little thing throughout the entire match of Stokely Hathaway sitting at commentary, basically doing all he could to cheer on Jay Lethal so that Eddie Kingston would no longer be the ROH World Champion. So that was match number one.
Okay, what was match number two?
It was Claudio versus Buddy Matthews.
Okay, how'd that go?
It was a good hard-hitting match between the two. They played up the idea of Claudio was the king of the uppercut, and Buddy was more masterful with, like, the leg strikes. So, like, the rising knees and things like that. And boy, did they both land them on each other. Claudio was working over Buddy. Buddy was getting his shots in on Claudio. Claudio kept trying to go for the giant swing throughout the match, but Buddy kept having a counter until finally he got put through the giant swing, got locked into the, well, they called it a sharpshooter, they called it a scorpion deathlock, they couldn't settle on what the move actually was.
Well, it depends on which way Claudio's facing the crowd of.
Right? Okay.
That's how that works?
Oh, if he's hard cam, it's the sharpshooter, but if it's that side angle like was in this match, it became the scorpion deathlock?
Yeah, that's okay. What we'll go with.
Yeah. Because they called it both within like 15 seconds of each other. They're like, he locks in the sharpshooter, and Matthews is caught in the scorpion deathlock. And I was just like, oh, Well, okay.
Whoops.
Yeah, and Buddy tried desperately to get to the ring ropes, and then he got pulled back to the center of the ring, and he just had to tap. So Buddy loses the match. Claudio extends his hand after a good hard-fought match, and Buddy slaps it away and basically tells him to piss off.
To continue whatever feud's going on between those two groups.
Yeah. There's something, I guess, going on between the BCC and the House of Black. We'll see what comes from it. But like I said, good match, Claudio. You know, they both performed well. Wheeler's a little bit busy with someone else because I think initially it was going, you know, it's more apropos for like Wheeler and Buddy to face off, but Wheeler has his eyes on a non-title title right now, I think.
Yes.
And speaking of titles, in our quote-unquote main event of the pre-show, MJF and Samoa Joe takes on the Gun Boys.
Okay.
Joe pulls out his usual shtick, walking away, you know, from a move. Although, I will give kudos. The Gun Boys got him up for the 310 to Yuma.
Boy, did they. That was impressive.
That was one of those where you're like, they're going to hit MJF with this. And all of a sudden, you see Joe in that position. You're like, oh, no. Okay. MJF and Joe were doing that bit where it was like, they were the enemies of the enemies of their friend. You know, that thing where, like, Joe would smack Max to get the tag and... It was kind of like, oh, so you're going to do this. Okay. So they had acrimony between the two, but they were fighting well. Ultimately, MJF picks up the win. Joe gets into his face and reminds him of his obligation now. I helped you, so if you win your match tonight, you're going to see me soon. And yeah. MJF was just kind of like, yeah, okay, whatever. He shook his hand, like, seriously, and then, like, as soon as Joe turned his back, he was just like, yeah, all right, sweet. And then the overbooking kicked in.
All right, overbooking, let's hear it.
So the Guns, post-match, jump MJF and proceeded to essentially pilmanize his knee. They hit him first with a steel chair in the left knee, and then they did the spot where they put it onto the knee and Austin got onto the second rope, jumped off, and stomped on the chair.
All while Adam Cole was standing 5 feet away, unable to do anything.
Oh, that's right. Adam Cole provided the distraction in the tag team match.
Because he wasn't allowed to compete, the keyword.
Well, that, and I don't think he's physically capable of doing anything.
Get into that, Casey. We'll get into that in just a moment.
Yes, yes, yes.
So Cole comes down with his surgical boot and the crutches to distract the Guns. That's when MJF and Joe pick up the win. And as Casey said, he's standing outside the ring helplessly as the Guns take turns essentially taunting him while the other is like ravaging Cole's or MJF's leg with a chair.
Like, they were literally, like, it was like, MJF was on the ground, Adam Cole was, like, 2 feet away from him, and the Guns were just beating the crap out of him, like, that close, be like, what are you gonna do? You can't do nothing. You can't, look at this, I'm gonna stomp on his face, it's right here, you can't do nothing. Yeah, I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, it was a great heel move on their part, and it was one of those things where it's like, yeah, if you're part of a faction and you know he's competing later against one of your boys, you want to soften him up. So, of course, it's going to be something like that.
Yeah.
But we got the spot where, like, the ringside doctor is checking on him. MJF is screaming in pain. They bring out the stretcher. They wheel him back, and the announcers are all playing out the, how is he going to compete later? He has the match tonight. I can't, you know, we don't even know if he'll be able to make this. What's going on? And the pre-show ended with MJF being loaded into an ambulance, screaming at Adam Cole, do not let them take my title. Do not let them take it away. And Adam has a very pensive look on his face of, what do I do?
Which then leads to the pay-per-view where... They may have Tony Schiavone do an announcement that, you know, they're going to cancel the match and that Jay White is going to, in theory, then be the world's heavyweight champion. Till Adam Cole came out and decided, no, I'm going to step in. I talked to Tony Khan. I'm going to be the one to step in and fight for the world and defend my best friend's honor and his title. in the main event against Jay White.
Okay, question.
Before you question, that would have been a great angle of Adam Cole coming out, standing up for his best friend. They already didn't blow the pop of him, you know, being on the pre-show. It would have been a bigger pop if no one knew Adam Cole was there and going to come out and stand up for his boy. That's my biggest problem.
True. Yeah, if it had been, you know, oh, we're about ready to give out the title, and then all of a sudden you hear it's all about the boom, and Cole just
hobbles out.
Cole could have even played it up like, look, I'm in the back here supporting my friend. I'm not going to let this shit happen.
Yeah.
But they already blew the pop of him doing a run-in during the pre-show main event. And like,
well, I mean, it makes sense there because technically Cole is one of the tag team champions.
It makes sense, but it would have been a bigger pop because no one would have known he was there.
Yeah.
If he just showed up and saved that moment. What they did was fine. Like, having him come out, like, Adam, please save my title. That was all fine. But the pop would have been so much bigger and better if it was like, boom, he came out as Jay White is about to hold up the championship over his head. And yeah. Adam Cole's music hit. That's how, it's like, it would make a bigger surprise appearance rather than, all right, he was in here and came, did the thing, and then he's with him as he loads in. Like, you're doing all the dramatics, it's fine. Man, the pop. Like, I just, as I'm just writing the story, it's like, man, that pop would have been huge.
Yeah.
For a moment, because you didn't know he was there, because as we've seen him, he's at home streaming on Twitch.
Or he's on a random iPhone call, which you can put on a TV, apparently.
Apparently.
I want to learn how to do that.
Well, I mean, I know you can airdrop, the same time,
it just right picks
it's
up
just
on...
really funny how they play that up. Wait, I'm going to put this on the TV.
So, anyway, you had a question.
Okay.
Right?
Okay, I have a question about this.
Yes.
So Adam Cole is too injured to compete for defending his tag team title, correct?
That is medically true, yes.
So how did he get medically cleared to be officially put into the world title match? If he was good enough to go to compete for Max in the world title match, in theory, if you were Tony Khan, shouldn't you have been like, well, then you're defending your tag belt. That's just a given.
He shouldn't have been medically cleared to even... Like, the angle shouldn't have been a thing where he has to be put in that position, because it makes you look stupid as a logical storyteller of, well, he can't compete for this, but hey, 3 hours later, he's here and he's going to step in a ring with 1 foot.
It didn't make sense.
And the other part of it is, and I mean, I talked to you about this, Rock, and logically speaking, if you had two guys who jumped and actively tried to, you know, take someone out of a match, knowing he was supposed to compete later, Tony, in theory, should have just gone, you know what, Jay, I'm not going to reward you for this. You're not, you know, you don't get the title shot tonight. You'll get it, like, Wednesday instead. And I know, like, in terms of the pay-per-view, that's not how you do it. But that mindset, essentially, of like, oh, so his two boys jump the champion, possibly, you know, tear his knee, break his leg, do whatever. And it's just like, oh, yeah, no, we're going to let the match happen, or we're going to let his other hobbled best friend compete for him.
As the phrase goes, you should find a suitable replacement for the champion. You know, right. a person with two legs.
Or you delay the match. Sometimes you've seen that, like, we're gonna postpone this 1 week.
And then Jay White puts up a fight throughout the night and comes out for the main event demanding that Max show up or Adam Cole show up and defend the title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something along those lines.
We'll get into what Max did later, but let's talk about the show itself, which kicked off with the retirement tour of the man known as Stang. Teaming with
his manservant, Ric Flair.
With his manservant, Ric Flair. Along with Darby Allin and Adam Copeland, a.k.a. Edge, a.k.a. Cliff. Taking on Christian Cage, Luchasaurus, and Nick Wayne.
Nope. What's their official name?
The Patriarchy or something like that?
Yes. If you look at the intro, so good and bad about this. Good. They have redone Christian's entrance to be the Patriarchy, and there's now, when they do the countdown, adjectives for, like, how great he is.
That was great. That was fantastic.
There's one problem with it, though.
What?
So they had the children singing. They show the introduction. You see the countdown. They get to one, and they cut away.
Oh.
It's like 4, 3, 2, kids. And then they cut back, and they've already kind of come out of the entranceway. And it's just like, God damn it, production.
Oh, we'll learn it.
And they screwed up the other entrance, too, when they showed the bats. Because you had, like, one bat appear, and then you had the second bat appear. And when they're going to show the third one to show, like, they're all together, again, cuts to the crowd. And then when it comes back, they're already, you know, edges, or I'm sorry, it's a full shot showing the entranceway, and you get the Beth drop of you think you know him. And it was just like, God damn it.
So everyone got face paints and jackets, and they touch bats, tips. They touch all touch tips.
Wrestling. Like you do.
Like you do. The entrance was good. They all came out to Edge's music, not Sting's. Sting's retirement tour. I don't know why he didn't get the music, but hey.
I like that it's Edge and Sting running back and forth doing the yelling for the crowd, and then Darby is just standing on the ramp.
Well, he's doing his little get down on his knees sort of gimmick thing that he does every time he comes out.
Yeah, don't worry. Darby got his shine later. And Sting had a great reaction for it.
So this was Darby Allin against three men for a while.
Yeah, I like that they teased, like, anytime Adam was going to get in the ring, Christian was just like, nope.
Nope.
Nuh-uh. We're not doing this.
Not doing it. But yeah. This was Darby wrestling this match. Sting and Edge really didn't do anything.
Oh, God. We had a Darby spot, of course, in this match. When Lucha hit that choke slam onto the side of the apron from the inside, that looked absolutely wicked.
Yeah.
And not in a good way. That was just one of those where you look at it and you're like, why?
I think that was the first he killed him I said of the night. Oh my God, he's dead. He murdered.
He murdered him. Before we go any further, Chad, if you would like this, a reminder, if you have Amazon Prime linked to your Twitch account, it's called Prime Gaming Support Channel. By clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen, it will give you an ad-free experience here at twitch.tv/WTRLive. And continue.
You know what? I didn't know how I would think something would go over, but heel Nick Wayne is kind of like Dom in a way of like, it just works of him being a complete dick.
Yeah.
I really didn't think it would. I thought a lot of people would just be like, oh, it's Nick Wayne, whatever. No, he perfectly plays the part of like snotty, you know, Gen Z-er, kind of like Dom. And it's just like, God damn it, this shouldn't work, but it does.
But it does. It's working for them. So that's what counts. Ric Flair. Let's talk about Flair.
Why is he there?
Because he's part of the Sting retirement tour. I think, honestly, it's going to end with the both of them.
I get that they're friends, and I understand the history and all that other stuff, and that's great, but could we not have? I think it would have been better if we didn't.
It would have been a lot better if we didn't.
Just, I don't know. I don't.
We don't need Flair. We don't need Flair.
All putting Ric Flair on TV does for me is like remind me of like how he shouldn't be involved in wrestling anymore.
Like a one-off appearance from Flair, cool, whatever, get a pop. But he shouldn't be ringside, being a manager or anything like that. He shouldn't be taking low blows and all this stuff. It shouldn't be a thing. Flair should not be selling for people.
And here's the biggest thing of it all. 2 to 3 months ago, Tony Khan, the person who signs the checks and makes the decisions for this company, went onto Twitter and basically called out Vince McMahon for his, quote, predatory behavior kind of stuff, right?
Not even that long ago.
Maybe a few weeks ago, even.
It was right when they went to war for NXT.
Okay, so he calls out Vince McMahon for that.
And then a week
you bring in the person who has more allegations against him.
It was a week later.
You bring in that man. And the one thing I will say is even the people who were diehards came out on social media and were just like, this is not a good move.
No, it's not. But hey, buy his energy drink.
Oh, my God. But, oh, God. This was our first instance of my favorite phrase in the wrestling world. Asperious discretion. Because before Ric Flair took a low blow in full view of the referee, gets physical with Christian.
I think Christian pushed him first.
Christian pushed him first. But the thing is, correct me if I'm wrong, if someone from outside of the match gets physical with a competitor, that is a disqualification. It doesn't matter if you're touched first or not.
Usually they get tossed before they get the disqualification.
Yeah, he should have been tossed.
But the thing, the problem with this is usually like when there is that kind of stuff, and I mean, we see this in, you know, the predominant match tonight. The referee may not actually see the attack take place, but they're like, hey, wait a minute, you look like you may have done something. Guess what? Goodbye. This was in full view, direct contact of the referee's vision. The ref is looking at him and going, hey, guys, don't do this.
Okay.
No.
That's great. That's great. But we have more worst referee discretion later.
Yes.
A very obvious referee discretion. that was a bigger than this one. This one you can let slide a little bit. There's another one that we're going to have to talk about later.
Okay.
Because that one was in, you say full view, you saw all of it, and so did she.
Yeah.
All of it and more.
And more. You saw it right on. Anyway, we'll get there. We're going to get there. Sting and Edge and Darby win. Huzzah. Sting got to celebrate.
Woo. Yeah, this is where Darby had his shine. When he told everyone, he grabs the microphone and basically tells the entire crowd, hey, this is the last time Sting is in your fucking state, so get up and cheer him, for fuck's sake. And you just had the camera on Sting of like, oh, Darby.
And Darby's going bye-bye now, because he's going to go climb Mount Everest or train for it or whatever I think he's doing.
Yeah.
Or something. So he'll be gone for a couple weeks, probably. Who knows? Or he's back on TV on Wednesday. I don't know.
I don't think it'll be that fast.
No, but he'll be back shortly.
Yeah.
What I do know, it's Orange Cassidy, it's John Moxley for the, what is it, International Championship? International Championship. You had Hook at ringside, and Wheeler Yuta ringside. Mox bled. And then I didn't like this match. I didn't like the ending. I didn't like Mox, like, his overselling and cartoony way of selling all the punches and stuff. Something about it just didn't sit well with me. Because it felt like Mach could just beat the snot out of him and been done with it, and then he's over-the-top selling of the punches at the end. I don't know, took me out of the match. But I might be in the minority on that one.
Yeah, they've made Moxley essentially one of the, you know, like, the big boss that you kind of have to fight now.
Which is fine.
It's gotten to that point where it's like they've ramped it up to where, yeah, like it takes superhuman efforts now to beat him. So the lead up to this, it was that, like, you know, oh, the orange punch isn't that effective against him. So apparently now you have to land six of them.
And an exposed turnbuckle, and he's just stumbling and stumbling and stumbling and taking every shot. It's like, I look at it, Mox would just spin around, close on him, and she should knock the kid out. To me, Mox should have been their previous matches were better. This one's just, I don't know. The ending just didn't sell it for me. I thought Mox, because he was just having his way with him for a while, just sort of like, okay, you know, one move and then, oh, comedy stumbles and stuff. I don't know. That's me.
Yeah. I think with the way that they told the first match, and I mean, this could just be me. With the way they told the first match and Moxley kind of asserting his will against him, and then we've already kind of seen what happens with an Orange Cassidy international title run. I mean, we had it for, what was it, 200, 300 days almost?
31 title defenses.
31 straight title defenses, and it was like, you know, oh, as he fights, he continues to break down and break down. And part of, I mean, the Moxley story was like, yeah, Orange Cassidy was beat up, and Moxley was able to just annihilate him in a sense. But, I mean, Cassidy kind of ran through that whole group, and now we're going to get it again. I don't mind, like, an Orange, you know, Orange Cassidy defending the title, but who is his next, you know, who's next for him?
That's a question. But what do you think about the match, Cash?
I don't know. I'm not as critical of it as you were on the ending. I thought it was okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Mox is overselling. I definitely agree with you on, though. At the time, it wasn't something I like super noticed. But once he like pointed out, I'm like, yeah, he kind of went just a little bit too much, especially when there were like certain instances where he would get hit and like drop and get up right away.
Yeah, that
and
exactly.
Suddenly he kind of got wibbly wobbly.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was just a little too much.
That's exactly like, what it was. That moment right there. It took me out. Yeah.
I think it would have been better if like every single time he hit him, it just took him like a little bit more time to get to his feet.
Yeah.
Just to show like, oh, okay, he's constantly wearing him down with each punch, and we're watching to see just how many punches it's going to take to keep him down.
Well, and I think that's more believable in the fact of, like, when you get, you know, if you see, like, a UFC match or something, it's like, yeah, someone can absorb a hit at the start of a match, but it's like, if blow after blow after blow, it's like, yeah, it's going to grate on you until eventually, you know, the sum of the parts take effect.
Yeah, so I think that's probably what they were trying to go with, is like he had to hit him with like five or six orange punches before he could beat him. It's just, yeah, his selling was just a bit too cartoony even for an Orange Cassidy match.
It was just saying something for an Orange Cassidy match,
right? Yeah, I mean, especially the way that they kind of worked that match. Like, yes, he does comedy matches. And if you see a lot of his stuff, like, before on the indies and stuff, like, he did a lot of great comedy stuff. But the way they kind of put this one together, like, you could tell, like, okay, it's time to be serious. They didn't do a whole lot of funny shit. So having him kind of wobble like that, I don't know if I'd say it's worse than Shawn versus the Hulk. Shawn Michaels went pretty crazy.
Shawn was over the top.
Like,
Shawn,
and not
Shawn
just,
deliberately.
And not just at the end of the match. That was like bell to bell. Worse than Shawn versus the Hulk.
Here's the difference between Shawn and Hulk in this one. And this was more cartoony. Shawn was ego.
Yeah, Shawn was just, I don't really want to face this guy, so I'm going to do everything I can to over-exaggerate the shit out of it.
Shawn's ego got involved in that. That's what happened there. That's the difference. But Orange Cassidy still your international champion. See what happens.
To the joy of my child.
I mean, the kids love him. That's what counts.
Yep.
It is the AEW Women's Championship on the line. Kara Shida, timeless Toni Storm.
This gimmick just works.
Oh, timeless Toni Storm is so good. It's so good. She does such a good job with it.
Her tearing up the script at the beginning. We're going off book.
Tearing up the script. The absolute cartoonish, like, wind up for the punch. Like, she embodies early Hollywood and just, like, that over-the-top cheesiness that is, you know, like, silent films and, you know, just even the comedy movies that happened in that era. It's like, yeah, everything was just take it and ramp it up to 11. Yeah. And I love that she has just taken this gimmick and absolutely run with it.
She's doing such a good job with it.
That being said, # referee's discretion.
Boy, oh
my God. Oh, dear God.
What happened at the end, Brent? Please describe it.
So Luther had brought down the shoe. Because, as we all know, the whole part of this gimmick is shoulder back, tits out, and watch for the shoe. So, the shoes were on a silver platter. Legitimately. Platter. Luther gives her one, and then tucks one into the back of her pants. She also, at one point, takes the platter and shoves it into her pants. So, first shoe serves as a distraction, so that she can use the second shoe.
Which was fine. That part was fine because it was done...
It was done in a way to distract the referee.
And,
which
yeah,
is the way
and,
it should be.
And the, you know, it worked out well that, like, the referee took the one shoe away, so she had the opportunity to use the other shoe and throw it away, and the referee didn't see anything. Perfect.
Yeah, so that worked out. Shida kicks out. Toni is shocked. Everything is happening. This is where Toni takes the platter and shoves it into her pants. The problem is, the platter is also coming out of her pants. So she has to, like, readjust it and goes to hit the hip attack to Sheeta in the corner.
Which, I like the idea, but it was, yeah, it just didn't stay.
The butler's tray was too big.
It was too big. The problem is this is also in full view of the referee.
Well, when the referee got down to count, yeah, it was like right there.
And you see her turning her head, looking, and just like, okay, I gotta look away. 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, you can tell she was trying to like get really low and check the shoulders and doing the best that she could to avoid making eye contact with it. And like, Tony could have done a different type of pin where she was like laying on her back and holding the legs so that the pan was kind of like under her butt on the mat or something. So like, you got that combination of like how Tony pinned Sheeta and where the ref had to get down to make the count. And it was just a perfect storm of it could not have been. Oh, I put, yeah. Okay. Pun intended. Sure. It just, yeah. Every Murphy's Law took full effect at the end of that match. What could go wrong went wrong. The pan was sticking out. The referee was in the wrong spot and could see it. And just, yeah, that like everything leading up to that was great. And then that ending just kind of was like, ah, oh, that's too bad.
Now, I will defend Toni Storm in one instance. You've seen her cake. She cannot hide a pan like that with that thing there. I'm sorry. You know, it's unavoidable. Plus, it was just a really awkward thing to try and do.
Mm-hmm.
Very awkward to try to do. Let's be real.
But we did get, at the end, what is it, Marisha May?
Mariah May.
Mariah May, on perfect cue from, what the hell is his name?
Luther.
British announcer.
Oh,
Nigel.
Crap, why?
Nigel McGuinness.
Yeah.
When Nigel McGuinness is referencing getting her flowers, here comes Mariah May with the flowers. That was actually good timing.
Yes.
That worked out well.
It did.
And so now we have our second 3-time women's champion. I really hope this goes better for her than her other title reigns.
I think I will enjoy it more solely based on this new gimmick. Like, I'm just thinking of like the tropes and the things that they will do with that title in this black and white sort of like movie era sort of gimmick she's running. I think they'll come up with some pretty awesome stuff that like will either make me laugh hysterically or just like enjoy it regardless.
I hope it works, but we'll see. The tag team titles were on the line. Ricky Starks and Big Bill defend against Rush and Drillistico. Taking on Black and King in FTR and in a ladder match for the tag titles. It was a ladder match? I don't know.
Yeah.
Kind of over ladder matches for a while.
They did a couple of cool things in this one that like, I mean, nothing. I wouldn't put them in like a top 10 of ladder moments, but they did enough to kind of like not just be like, oh, it was another ladder match. It's like, oh, okay, that kind of sucked and looked okay. Which ones?
The whatever bomb that Brody King hits.
Yeah.
Where it's
across the ladder?
When yeah, he hit the driver on Drillistico on the ladder. Well, it was just like, oh, that did not land well.
No, that's kind of like one of the things I was talking about. Like, that was really good. That whole, like, that and the follow-up after that. I think they ended up laying Brody King back on the ladder there. And
oh, yeah, Cash coming off the top with the...
And almost losing his balance, but then he managed to regain it just enough to be like, yeah!
Yeah, the problem is, whenever you do the cross-body thing, because I've seen, like, Kofi land that kind of thing, too, in a ladder match, there's no real good way, in my opinion, to land that move unless you're going through the ladder.
Yeah.
And Cash's example is a perfect showing of why that is, because it's like he jumps off and he hits Brody and he like bounces off essentially.
Yeah.
And Brody just absorbs the hit and has to like roll off, and you know that that's just a move that as soon as that hits, it's just like, oh, yeah, that wasn't a good idea.
I mean, I would much rather be the guy laying on the ladder than the one jumping, because I feel like the jumper, not only does he like take the impact of the landing, but also like the bounce off and hitting the floor, whereas the guy on the ladder kind of like is already like on the ladder, so it's kind of like, yeah, a couple rungs kind of dug into me and there's a lot less surface area, but at least I'm not hitting it.
True. Although there was one kind of funny spot that happened during the match that I was just like, okay, that was kind of fun and against the trope. When they had the ladder set up and it was, I think, Cash and Roosh. They were like climbing and they were gonna start fighting at the top of the ladder, and they looked for a second and were just like, wait a minute. And they just get off the ladder and kind of push it to the side, and they're like, let's just fight on the mat, for God's sake.
I mean, there's good logic.
Yeah, instead of, like, you know, you're sitting on top of the ladder and throwing those punches and someone falls off, or, you know, you both get tipped over. I just like that idea of, like, nah, this isn't a good idea. Just get off and, like, let's just go.
Yeah.
Ricky Starks and Big Bill, still your tag champs.
I have no problem with that right now. Ricky had a spot in the match where he just looked like a beast.
Yeah.
Which is good to see, because he's been kind of on and off throughout his run in AEW, so it's good to see him like get featured a bit, especially in a match with so many people that were all there together.
Up next, three-way for the TBS Women's Championship, Chris Statlander, Julia Hart, and Sky Blue. I enjoyed this. I thought
it was really well done.
I thought these women worked really well together. They worked in the backstories of how they were in the pandemic together, and then they've all sort of drifted apart. Sky Blue is no longer Sky Blue. She's more of a dark blue. Now
it's Midnight Blue.
Midnight Blue.
Boom, boom. Oh, she stepped on her hat, for God's sake.
She did.
Aww.
She put her crown on her head, so the darkness is overtaking. I really enjoyed this. I liked everything but the finish.
Yeah, I think Statlander played her role well in being the heavy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. When she needed to be. And then you had those moments where it's like Julia and Sky both were able to use their speed and agility to kind of counteract her, which was good moments. And then you had those moments where it was like that tease of like, are Julia and Sky together? And, you know, is the coven going to form? And then like Julia would just start laying into her and you're going, oh, I guess not.
Yeah.
Julia Hart is now your new TBS Women's Champion. 6 weeks ago, it would have been great finish and win. Hey, she beat the champion. She didn't beat the champion. She beat Sky Blue. That's my issue with it. If you're going to take the bell off of Chris, have her drop it correctly.
Well, I suppose that kind of gives them a little bit more to do.
It does, but I would have rather seen like that as the moment. Her big win is she beats the actual champion.
Yeah.
My biggest problem with this was away from the match, personally. I didn't like the finish of, like, Statlander hits her, was it Saturday Night Special? I think is what it's called.
Saturday Night Fever or whatever.
Yeah. So she hit that, and Julia kind of hit her with a clothesline and rolled up Sky Blue to get the win. That, sure, that's how you can finish the match. I didn't like the presser.
Yeah, I heard
about
that.
Because the entire thing about Julia Hart and this whole thing that is going on is that, you know, like she's embraced the darkness and she's this mysterious like siren of the House of Black. And then she goes to, and I know that the post show presser is really just, it's not in storyline and people let their guard down. But Julia was just like completely not what she is on screen.
She was Julia, not her character.
Yeah, she was Julia, and it's like, I understand this is a great moment for her. This is her first title. She's the youngest champion in AEW history. That's great. I loved her reaction when someone brought up the, you know, oh, her old cheerleader gimmick, and she was just kind of like, oh, God. Like, she didn't want to relive that.
About.
She's just like, she just didn't want to talk about it. But I just, for something like this, I know that there's sometimes where it's like, oh, there's this blurring, or it's this idea of, you know, yeah, we know it's a character. But I just wish there was a little bit more of like a commitment to that role in the presser.
Yeah,
I think it could have like stuck a little more. But instead, it was just like, you know, oh, no, we caught her after the show.
It's her first presser, so I give it a pass. It's fine.
I understand. I was just saying.
Will Ospreay's AEW. Woo. We'll see.
Would have felt so much bigger if he hadn't been in the company for 6 months to a year before.
Also, we won't see him till February, is basically, or January, after New Japan stuff's over with. So this was just
I think technically his contract isn't up until February.
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yeah, so February.
Good on him for, like, fulfilling those obligations.
But but this is also, they didn't need to announce this. They just did it to do something. Tony had to live up to something.
Yeah.
They could have done this in January, and no one would. It would have been the same thing, and he would have been closer to return to debuting. They did this just to, hey, we need an extra thing for the pay per view, so we talked New Japan and got their blessing to sign him. That's what this was.
Oh, it's fine. Speaking of New Japan, I think around this time of the show is when they were announcing the Continental Classic.
We'll get to that. We'll get to the at the end of, when we're done.
Okay.
I was saving that because I have a quote, and I want to get to that at the very end.
Okay. Cool. Now we're going to talk about the match that this pay-per-view is known for.
Before we do, Chad, if you have Amazon Prime, link it to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming. You can support the channel by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen. It will give you an ad-free experience when you watch live here at twitch.tv/WTRLive. Just do the thing if you don't like ads. That's kind of deal, because ads are coming up, and that's just a reminder, ad-free experience with Twitch Prime. Hangman Page, Swerve Strickland, Texas Deathmatch.
Oh, dear God.
They Texas Deathmatched like no one has ever Texas Deathmatched before.
Okay. In the first 5 minutes of this match, you had one character run in without his music and start to just waylay his opponent.
That was good. I like that.
Which is good. Yeah, it should be. Yeah. When it's this personal, it shouldn't be, I'm going to wait for my music. It's, I'm going to come down there and kick your ass right now. I don't care. Although we did get a Prince Nana dance entrance.
That's
Were those Laker girls?
No, I don't know. Well, fake Laker
just
girls.
Dancers.
Just dancers.
Just dancers.
Just dancers, but apparently the Nana dance is taking off more than ever before.
Or so they want you to believe. But anyway.
But I mean, there
was a video on Twitter of Aubrey Edwards doing the dance backstage while it was happening.
Wow. Someone from the company did the dance.
Yeah.
Viral.
But within the first 5 minutes, so like I said, you had someone run out and jump his opponent. He then produced a staple gun and stapled his child's finger painting two opponents' face.
First, he stapled himself in the chest multiple times, and then...
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. First, he had duct taped his wrist together.
First, we got duct taped and taping the wrist together, which did not work the first time, because it looked like the tape caught itself, and he had to fix it and redo the tape.
Then it was staple gun to the face, staple gun to the chest. Then it was, because his opponent is bleeding, lays on the mat... And gets the opponent's blood into his mouth and then spits it out like Triple H does with water.
I hated this. I hated everything about this. I didn't like it. I don't need to see it. I didn't need to see it multiple times on Twitter before I actually saw it when I watched the match. No. A man should not be drinking another man's blood like that. No, that should not be a thing in 2023. We should not be seeing that on television, on pay-per-view, whatever it is. That should not be a thing. It was disgusting and terrible. The people who popped huge for it, great. But God, that is disgusting.
That is probably a part that I like. Staple guns have happened before.
That's fine. That part fine.
Other stuff. When I saw him lay down and get blood into his mouth, that's when I was just like. And I know the whole thing about it is like, okay, yeah, I guess it's supposed to make you feel uncomfortable, but I was just like, that, like you said, I was like, that's kind of a line for me.
It's just blood in general. It's a lot. It's too much. There's a line, and then you went over it. That's where you went over the line. This shouldn't have been a thing. It should not. Whoever's creative decision that was should have think twice. And I don't know if it got passed by anyone, and they just did it. Maybe they just did it. Who knows? It was dumb. Well, it was stupid. I don't need to see this on my wrestling. It's not wrestling.
Well, and the thing is, like, we've seen in the past where someone gets busted open and they will, like, the opponent will take blood and, like, smear it on their chest.
I've seen like, people lick it before off of that, their hand.
That's
stuff.
The licking it, because we've seen that in AEW as well, and I'm like, that's a bit much. Or when, like, Moxley, I think, fought Orange Cassidy the first time, and he, like, bit into the forehead, and you saw the blood running down his face. That's where I'm like, okay, no. When you're...
That, it goes from
possibly ingesting other bodily fluids. That's why I'm like, no, just mm-mm.
You went from you went from cringe to kinky.
I mean, you never. Some people may have a vampire.
Some people have those fetishes, which is fine. That's great. That's you go pay for it elsewhere, not here.
But yeah, and then like immediately after that, you had Swerve Hulk up. And then go on to staple himself repeatedly.
So no selling what happened. We were selling 5 minutes ago because the pain has kicked in and he's just like running off.
The adrenaline has ramped up apparently. We then had barbed wire wrapped chairs. We had Death Valley drivers on cement blocks on the apron.
Yep. Oh.
That one, I don't know how you take that safely.
Fake cinder block.
And like nowhere near the neck, more on the like thicker part of your back. But even then,
still not.
Yeah, there was the one spot where Swerve hit Paige with the barbed wire wrapped chair, and a piece of barbed wire came off the chair and like stuck itself to Paige's head. That was a little bit gruesome.
That is the nature of barbed wire.
Yeah.
That was unfortunate.
It was unfortunate and not the first time I've seen it with the very, very small handful of matches that I've seen that have involved large amounts of barbed wire. But
so they're having this really good one-on-one battle. Barbed wire, boards, bleeding, everything, whatever, the disgusting stuff, yada, yada, yada.
Bottle, broken glass on the back of Adam Page, yeah, and then a 450 splash.
That was, I don't know about that. It's for some people. It's not for me anymore.
No, I mean, I'm not a big fan of death matches in general. This was like getting real close.
We're really getting close these days, and it's more common with them than less common now.
It's the deathiest of death matches.
It's the GCW influence.
It is.
Brought to you by Domino's.
But then we had Brian. We had then Brian Cage.
That was Pizza Hut.
Whoever it was, Brian Cage ran in.
That wasn't needed.
We didn't need this. Didn't need it.
No.
Didn't need the run in. Kind of ruined the match a little bit. I know it was like so he's trying to overcome the odds, but the odds were still too much against him. But they were having a bloody brawl where the other man, he was drinking the man's blood. You didn't need trying to overcome odds. He got in the end. He took the cinder block to the head or his back. They got choked out with the chain. He got hung. The hangman got hung.
Uh-huh.
And he almost still made it to his feet.
Almost made it to his feet. But Swerve gets the win. The interference takes this match down a little bit. Drinking the blood takes it down a lot. But the interference wasn't needed. You didn't need it. That's the one thing this match didn't need.
Yeah. And to me, I talked about this on Saturday after the match hit. My question is, Keishi, this has to be the end of the feud, right?
One would hope.
I mean, you had Swerve Strickland win in a straight-up singles match. I mean, it got a little crazy in the singles match, but he won the singles match. He then won a Texas death match.
Yeah.
There is no real way to take it another level where you can get Paige a win, and yet you've rewarded the man who broke into his home and basically almost violated his family. Where do you go from here?
I mean, ideally you don't.
And Swerve should be challenging MJF for a World's End.
But Joe gets the first shot.
You can get a winner's coming. I don't know.
Yeah.
He should be challenging for a championship, but he's not going to fight for the TNT title because that's a different feud and that's not where they're headed. He beat a former world champion. Go fight for the world title.
Yep. Well, I mean, they could have him and Joe kind of go up against each other if they don't want to give Swerve a shot right away. Because
then he's got to beat Joe. If, like, that's kind of the thing.
Yeah. Or you know, like, if they want to kind of delay Swerve getting a shot for a while, they could have Swerve come out and be like, all right, well, I'm next. And then Joe comes out and takes umbrage, be like, well, actually, I have a deal with Max. And, I mean, you could wait your turn, or we can figure it out and have those two fight each other an idea.
You just hope his trajectory goes up rather than stagnates. Like, I don't know, someone named Wardlow.
Yeah.
Hey, he's having great 30-second matches on Collision now. Okay?
Yep, I've been seeing them. Well, I've been seeing them for 3 years.
And he's also theoretically, I mean, having all these guys kind of like, you know, set their sights on MJF makes sense. Cause
that's good. That part of the story is great.
Yeah, he's pissed off a lot of people. It's just a matter of like, hey, what do you mean I'm a better booker than an NFL owner and let that sink in? That's mean.
But no, like,
no, having everybody kind of like set their sights on MJF makes sense because he pissed off a lot of people.
Having his world coming to an end makes sense.
Yeah, it's just now the only problem with that is you got to figure out like who gets the shot
one.
And what are you going to do with everybody else who's kind of zeroing in on him too. At some point, they're either going to have to like cross paths or be like, you know what? I'll wait my turn. I can do that. Golly gee, that sounds like a great idea. And if you look at some of those guys, like Swerve
Joe.
Ain't going to wait his turn. Wardlow is angry. He's not going to want to wait his turn. Joe has a handshake agreement with MJF. He ain't going to wait his turn either. And whoever else you got waiting in the wings is going to come out and be like, well, this, that, and the other thing. So you have to have them either collide or some sort of authority figure is going to have to come out and be like, well, here's how it's going to happen. And if you don't like it, kick rocks.
Oh, God, this is how AEW is going to introduce their own elimination chamber, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. No, they're too scared to put all their main eventers in one match together. Look at their track record. They don't want to. The fact you got Kenny Omega and MJF on television is a big surprise. Speaking of Kenny Omega, he teamed with Chris Jericho to take on the Young Bucks.
Okay, this is another fun thing from production. I love that they changed the mat out from Swerve Strickland and Adam Page, because you kind of had to.
Yeah.
They didn't clean the ropes.
No. Well, I mean,
you could have at least gotten like a wet towel or something to like,
or just like put another layer of tape on them.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been so bad too if they weren't white ropes.
Yeah, you wouldn't have seen it if they weren't white. But yeah,
I just noticed that like the ring, you know, the mat was changed, the canvas was all clean, and then like the camera goes to Jericho as he walks past the ropes, and there's this giant red smear, and I was like, oh,
yeah.
Whoops.
Well, hopefully those two got all their tests done before they had the match.
So this match was, it was fine. It was a Young Bucks Kenny match. It was fine.
Yeah. It wasn't as flippy of a Young Bucks match as we're used to.
No, the bigger thing.
It was more dickish Bucks.
Yeah.
Which is fine.
And kind of what's going to happen here. Kenny Omega and Chris Jericho win. They get the tag title shot from the Bucks. Bucks threw a tantrum. Looks like they're going heel.
I would say I like during the match at one point where I think it was Matt was going to low blow Kenny, and he's thinking about it, and he's like, nah, I won't do it. And then like immediately Nick comes behind him and just wham.
I think it was the other way around.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause like, I know
I,
at the beginning,
get the Bucks screwed up.
Well, I mean, yeah, they're brothers, but yeah. Cause at the beginning of the match you had Kenny and Nick, they kind of were just like, yeah, well, you know, we're in a match. Here's our little elite handshake, slap, knuckles gimmick. And they seemed okay, but also not okay. And then Matt was just like, he was just like the I'm not okay with any of this throughout the whole thing.
Nope. We're going to do this.
Yeah. But then, I mean, as the match went on, they kind of both, like you saw Nick kind of like lean more towards the way that kind of Matt was going. And then there were all
you saw
kinds
that
of
tease from Kenny,
yeah,
with the V trigger. Where it's like, is he going to hit Jericho with it? He does the bang towards him and bounces off the ropes and hits the Bucks. Mm-hmm. So the Golden Jets get a t- title opportunity
at their choosing.
Yay.
Well, I mean, I guess that's how they keep Kenny Omega out of the main title picture.
I guess so.
Yeah. And apparently the Bucks are have like completed their obligations for being the Elite, according to Brandon Cutler online.
It's them going heel, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's them. That's them going dark.
So it's
dark isn't happening anymore.
They canceled Dark.
Oh, well.
They're going collision?
They're going Dark Side. How about that?
Oh, fair.
they're going Ring of Honor.
So it's now time for your main event for the world's heavyweight title. It is Jay White challenging Adam Cole Bebe for the championship. So Jay White comes down, normal entrance. Adam Cole's walking down, hobbling with crutches and a walking boot, doing his entrance as best as he could, sitting on there.
Sitting on the ring apron, doing the boom.
I'm going to read you the following tweets. From one Dr. Britt Baker.
Yes. Yes. I was wondering if this was going to get mentioned.
This was so good.
So good.
So Tony Khan tweeted tonight at the Kia Forum, AEW Full Gear, and it's the graphic of Adam Cole and Jay White. Britt, the fuck? Not the wrist tape. This MF. So those are the two tweets. There's more.
Oh, you didn't see the other one?
No, there's more.
He's getting to it.
We're going to get there.
I just wanted to make sure.
So you have those two tweets. He's in the ring getting ready. Adam Cole.
I did like the touch of having the wrist tape.
It was good. So Adam Cole's in the ring ready to go, and they're just ready to ring the bell. And then you hear the ambulance roll up. And MJF comes out. And there's multiple men holding MJF back from trying to get to the ring. Because he just came from the hospital. He stole an ambulance. And he's coming out to fight for his championship.
He's gimping along.
And I quote, I still want to know why 20 bodies tried to stop Max from getting in the ring, but the dude with crutches from two ankle surgeries got a whole ass unbothered entrance.
Wait, wasn't there another one?
Yes, there was.
I'm going up on her Twitter as we go.
Okay, wonderful. Okay.
So we have the match. So now MJF and Jay White. And MJF is selling the whole injury.
Jay White with some wicked dragon screws in this match, by the way.
Very much so. Britt Baker, I had to look twice. I thought he had a terrible towel out there. The yellow thing he had.
Yeah, he has the yellow towel.
This is crazy because this man told me the reason he's not loading the dishwasher is because he can't stand for very long.
One is my favorite.
That was the one I was waiting for.
What we are witnessing is miraculous, folks.
I'm sorry. I need Britt Baker to live tweet Dynamite and Collision from now on, just making observations about the roster. If this is what she can do for Adam Cole when he's not competing, she needs to be in charge of social media.
There's a tweet later from for the presser. So MJF and Tony Khan are sitting for the scrum, but the dude with crutches is standing. There you go. So the match.
I just love how bitter she is about this entire thing. Just
selling it well.
Yes.
Selling it well. So this whole match is him selling the injury, and they're working on it. He can do some of his stuff, but he's injured. But then there's a part that Brent really, really enjoyed.
I felt so bad.
Let's talk about the table.
Okay. So the the ringside announce table, which is what they've gone to for some of these shows now in AEW, got a lot of run in this pay-per-view. Yes. John Moxley was placed upon it. Paige and Swerve were kind of dancing around it and getting involved. So MJF decides, you know what? Our match is going to have a table spot. I'm going to place Jay White on there, and I'm going to put him through. So he gets Jay White to the table. He places him upon it. And as soon as Jay White gets on top of that table, the table goes on strike and just collapses.
I've taken all I can take. I can't take any more.
Look, I've been putting through this show for 4 hours. I'm done. I'm tapped out. MJF looks at this thing and goes, you know what? Screw it. I'm doing it anyway. He proceeds to go to the top rope and deliver a Randy Savage-style elbow drop onto Jay White, with his elbow basically catching the cover of the announce table that was still sitting there. He then proceeds to, I believe, dislocate his hip in doing so.
Yes.
Dear God, Max. This is one of those moments where I will never question how actually tough MJF is. Because you're supposed to go through the table which absorbs that kind of thing. Nope. He saw the table crash and went, screw it, I'm going to the pads anyway. But as when I watched him put White on the table and it just fall over, I laughed for about 5 good minutes.
He did.
About that moment.
We were talking, he laughed for 5 minutes.
It was just so funny of like, we're going to put you on, boom, well, shit. And it just happens in those kinds of situations. They're supposed to, like, be made to break. It was just the most unfortunate timing that could have happened.
So this was a really good match. MJF selling and all the things. He did everything. They sold the injuries and what have you. You had the guns run out at the end. You had Adam Cole play his part. Then you had the dynamite ring.
Oh, wait. There was one other move that happened in this match that was ridiculous.
What was that?
MJF delivers a jumping cutter over the top rope to the floor.
Oh, yeah, he did that.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
Shit!
You want to know what else probably didn't help us with the hip? That.
Yeah, that probably did not help him either, but I will say that was a very clean-looking move.
Oh, it was smooth.
It could have gone horribly wrong.
But boy, did that landing. Oh.
Oh, yeah. The landing was not great either. But just delivering that move looked spectacular. And yeah, Jay White sold the shit out of it.
Yeah.
But the Dynamite Diamond Ring comes into play in the end. Because Adam Cole had it. For whatever reason. And
it's his bro Chacho. He's the holder of the ring.
It helped MJF retain the AEW World Heavyweight Championship.
Good match. I don't know if it needed the John Cena / Cody Rhodes treatment. It feels like MJF is really kind of embracing the Cody kind of face run.
As he should.
As he should, but it just feels... It feels like rather than just letting him be a face and letting him be kind of, you know, oh, the scumbag that the fans... appreciate, that we're getting into that, like, okay, we're overbooking for overbooking's sake. Like, consistently putting him in 2 matches in 1 night and doing the, okay, he's gonna open the show, and then he's gonna close it. Because we've seen that at least, what, twice? 3 times with him?
Something like that? I don't know, I've lost count.
And then the whole, you know, okay, we're gonna give him an injury, and he's fight through it, and kind of like what we talked about earlier in the show of, like, you know, he's going to overcome the odds or try to overcome it and succeed and do all of that. It just feels like we're getting to the point where, and I mean, you talked about this before, Rock, like, are they overexposing MJF now?
A little bit, but I liked how this finish went. But then there's the whole logic of Adam Cole could wrestle, why didn't he wrestle?
Mm-hmm.
But also, as Britt mentioned, why are 20 people holding MJF coming to the ring and Adam Cole can do Adam Cole, baby, boom, and no one blinked an eye.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's all fine and good. Britt, we'll get to your topic in a second, but I want to do housekeeping first.
Okay.
Housekeeping.
So, housekeeping for this show. We had 4 people do entries, tied for 2nd place at 7-4. We have 1, Keishi Matsunaga.
Yay.
We have 1, Sir Rockin.
Hey.
And we have 1, The Intern.
Nice. Wait, uh-oh.
Aha. So
there's a 4th.
Oh, no.
Sitting in 1st place. Rock, drum roll, please.
I don't have a drum roll. Just, there you go.
At 9-2, defeating the field by 2 matches, is 1, Lindsay Ward.
Oh.
Who, by the way, was undefeated until the final 4 matches. She, the I've been here. Yeah, until the TBS Championship, she was undefeated, and then the Texas Deathmatch also did her in. But otherwise, she went 9-2. The rest of us went 7-4. So there's our housekeeping for the for this pay per view. And you may hate it here, but you won.
Facts are facts. Okay, so
hashtag facts.
Coming up, starting this Wednesday on television, is the Continental Classic. Eddie Kingston announced on the pay-per-view that he'll be putting up his championships in this match, creating a triple crown championship called the Continental Championship. How that all logically works and whatever, besides the point. I want to read you a quote from Tony Khan from his presser. If people want to see a sports-based presentation in every match, there's 33 matches in the Continental Classic, so get ready. Strap in and every Wednesday and Saturday, the same people who don't want to see any outside interference. I'm not bullshitting, I'm dead serious. If you don't want to see any outside interference, if you want to see straight wrestling at its best, very best, in a great field, then put your money where your fucking mouth is. Tony Khan.
What?
Yep, this is him blaming us for you know, you want straight wrestling? Well, you know, make sure you watch it and not have our ratings tank.
Oh, I see.
Because people are complaining it's not the AEW they used to know to get more sports entertainment.
Oh, so he's basically saying if you want old AEW, you better watch the crap out of this tournament?
Yep.
I mean, okay.
Hey Rock,
mm-hmm.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
So this match is for a title, right? Or technically three titles.
It'll be the creation of the Continental Championship or whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, the Continental Championship combined with the two other titles to create a universal type, whatever. And there won't be interference in these matches, right?
That's what he said.
So we just saw a pay-per-view where there was interference in at least 2 to 3 championship matches. I see a disconnect.
Put your money where your fucking mouth is and watch these tournament matches and make sure our ratings don't tank in when we're presenting traditional sports wrestling.
Well, the other thing I have to say about this, so they're creating a triple crown of titles that this one winner will get.
Basically, yeah.
Which includes a championship, a promotion that is not yours.
But they're working with their partner for this, yes.
I think it's a partner.
I don't think all three belts will be defended all at the same time, all the time. I think they just mean, like, Eddie Kingston's just like, I'm going to defend both of these belts in every single match so you can win. You can, basically, at the end, you will have won three belts. It doesn't mean, like, every match after that, all three are defended. It's up to booking or whoever has all the belts to decide whether he wants... They want to defend all 3, 2, 1, yada, yada, yada.
I understand that, but number one, the way they're presenting it makes it sound like it's all three are together synonymously. Yeah. Number two, if I'm New Japan, I would be a little pissed off that it's just like, wait, you're taking our championship and turning it essentially into, I mean, I know it's a partnership, but you're taking our U.S.-style championship and turning it into a prop.
It makes zero sense, but you know, it's fine.
This is also, they need to be really careful with who they put in this tournament.
Drawings tomorrow, the reveal of everyone, I think, is tomorrow.
And I know that they've already named 4 people for it.
I think they probably made Brian Kingston.
Briscoe.
Garcia.
What's Garcia? No, Andrade. Andrade is the 4th.
I thought Garcia was in this as well.
I didn't hear Garcia announced yet. I mean, unless he was announced at the presser. I know the four that were through full gear were Briscoe, Kingston, Andrade, and Danielson.
Well, it made it seem like he was going to be in it. Who knows?
But AEW has a real knack when they create tournaments of being like, here's 2 or 3 stars that are definitely going to make it to the finals, and then here's like Lee Moriarty, and here's Lance Archer.
Mm.
Where it's like, and I mean, I know sometimes in the G1, there may be a name or two where it's like, but AEW, when they put tournaments together, you can honestly look at how it's bracketed out and go, this person's winning, this person's winning, this is the semis, this is the finals, this is exactly how it's going to go.
And this is going to be a round robin tournament as well. So, but it was, yeah, it's right. Only those four. Garcia apparently is not announced yet.
But in my opinion, if you really want this Continental Classic to be, you know, a quote-unquote, like, G1 or a real wrestling kind of thing, you need to have, like, Danielson, Omega, you know, Page,
Swerve.
You need to put the names in there, and you need. I know that, like, oh, this means that someone's going to have to eat a loss, or, you know, like, if they draw, they don't get points or something along those lines. Yeah, you're going to have to try and do some of this to make it interesting. Otherwise, if it's, again, Bryan Danielson, Mark Briscoe, I know he's not in here, but, like, Samurai del Sol, or, you know, was it Fuego del Sol?
Speed the elite of the elite in AEW.
Yeah, the boys. You know, not Dalton Castle. We're going to put his underlings in here.
No, it should be Miro should be in it. Brian is in it. It should be everyone you've been talking about pushing forever and have them all compete.
Well, yeah, they do that in the G1. They put all their big names in there.
They do.
And like, G1, oh, no. Some of them take losses. Big deal. Sometimes that happens, especially when in a tournament like this, when you have to wrestle against other elite guys that as often as they do. And I mean, I don't know if they aren't going to probably do it as often as a G1 where you have a G1 match, you're wrestling in a G1 match every other show. But even still, like if you're doing a round robin tournament and you're putting in all of your elite guys, eventually sometimes you're going to have an off night or you're going to be like beaten up and sore from wrestling someone else the previous night, and someone's going to catch you off guard. It's going to happen. So they definitely need to have those elite guys in there, and they have to not be afraid for some of these guys to take a loss and rely on the commentators and the wrestlers and telling the story and how they booked the matches to justify why maybe it wasn't somebody's night.
That's the way it should be. Also, this whole thing is because Bryan Danielson can't fly out of Japan and do the G1, so Tony created one for him. That's
I mean, the other nice thing is, like, having Kevin Kelly as a commentator for AEW now, he could be the guy, because he has G1 experience, to set it up and tell those stories to help justify some of these losses for the guys. So, like, if you put some of these Continental Cup matches on Collision, which they totally should.
No, it's every Wednesday and Saturday.
Yeah, so then you can have guys like Kevin Kelly who have experience running the G1 and hopefully helping out all the other commentators be like, well, here's how I do it. And
he should be the guy you use just for the G1 stuff.
Yeah.
Well, honestly,
bring him in for a Wednesday taping.
Well, especially now that he's done with
New Japan.
He's done with New Japan. Japan. Yeah, he could be the voice of the Continental tournament.
Well, and Ruck, the way in which Tony started that tweet is how you market this thing. This is sport. And the way in which, I mean, any sports fan knows, any team can win on any given night. Just like Casey was touching on, sometimes you catch someone's best effort. They may be a complete underdog, but by God, you know, that's what the NCAA tournament is for. A 16 can beat a 1. It's very rare, but it can happen, and it's what makes it exciting when that kind of thing happens. And so if you have someone beat Bryan Danielson in this tournament, that means something. That's going to make people watch and be like, oh, okay, this is intriguing now. Or you make it so that, you know, one of the guys is down in points and needs to pick up the wins in order to stay relevant. You know, oh, they've lost a match or two. Now they need to win their next two or three in order to still stay up at the top of the table. That's how you sell it. That's how you make it intriguing. And that's where you can have some of these big matchups where it's like, yeah, guys are going to fight to pick up that win because they need it to stay relevant.
And hopefully they do. But I think that's our show.
We'll be back in 1 month's time for World's End.
That'll do it for Steve Hero Not So Live, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. For those in the United States of America, happy Thanksgiving, which is why we're on tonight and the rack was on before us. Enjoy the Gobble Gobble Wobble Wobble Thanksgiving Spectacle. That was The Rack, available now at RackRadioShow.com. What we're doing Saturday is up in the air. I don't know what show I'm doing. I haven't fully decided yet. Whether it's CB Radio or The Rack, I have not decided. Because I owe CB, but I also want to do War Games.
It may depend on how the show goes.
I'm undecided yet. We are doing a show. We are doing a show Saturday, 11:30. But it's called... Figure that out. Sunday
Tune
night.
Tune in and find out.
Sunday night. It's Wrestle Talk Radio, 10 p.m. Eastern. Reviewing... WWE Survivor Series. There's no Fortnite streams until I fix the machine. I thought that was very obvious. Monday night, it's the Raw Post Show, 11 p.m. Eastern. The Rack will be live on Thursday night, as always, next week. Chat if you have Amazon Prime link to your Twitch account. It's called Prime Gaming. Support the channel by clicking the purple rectangular button below the screen. You can use Kirk or Rockstock for Fortnite item shop, OG season, OG stuff. There's lots of things coming. You can get the default skin now. The original default. It's in the shop today. And apparently Mom's Spaghetti is coming.
Event.
The Big Bang. Maybe we'll try this.
I have no idea what's going on.
Well, maybe
we'll talk. We'll talk to you about it later.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll stream the event. I don't know. We'll figure that part out. Lindsay will stream that event at least. Anywho, so there's that. You can follow us on Twitter at Wild Talk Radio, at TV Radio Live. Brent's on Twitter.
Yep, you can find me on Twitter, X, whatever the hell it's being known as nowadays, at Kane Kittens. So you can find me there. Whenever Fortnite streams are up, I'm on that. And then I'm also on CB Radio doing the Intern's Corner. Yay.
Case is on the socials.
Yeah, I'm on Twitter, X, and Instagram at Kyle Driver. I don't post that often because I suck at it.
But he's there.
But it's there. Sometimes I'll retweet a bunch of stuff or repost. Is that what it's called now?
It's reposting, yes.
I repost a lot. If you like reposts about Alberta and Western Canadian wrestling, you can check me out, and there will be lots of reposts on that.
Indeed. So this has been CBRadio Not So Live, right here on the Wild Talk Radio Network. We'll see you when we see you. Enjoy your Thanksgiving or your normal Thursday. However that fits everyone. We'll see you when we see you all week long along the airwaves of the Wild Talk Radio. Streaming live at wildtalkradio.com, twitch.tv/WTRLive, and
cbradiolive.com.